Shamat struggled to his feet in the wake of the scout ship's eruption through the temple. The breeding vats for the Nephilim were nearly all destroyed, their green, egg-like cocoons splashed down the side of the craft's hull. The Agigi slave master had barely escaped, sliding out of the control laboratory and down into the huge chasm ripped through the palace by the 200-foot spaceship. He looked at the floor where several of the birthing matrices had been maneuvered for evaluation.
I almost had you already!
Shamat looked at the Nephilim bodies sprawled across the ground. They were all still, save for one who didn't seem quite formed. Instead of shimmering scales adorning his flesh, the dermis was smooth, stretched taut over powerfully sculpted muscles. As nutrient gel sloughed off his shoulders and head, thick ropes of hair fell into the creature's face as it struggled to its feet. Shamat's throat constricted with panicked realization as the newly birthed creature before him rose to its full 6'8" height. The shaggy mane of hair spilled over shoulders the size of melons, and from under a heavy brow, dark eyes smoldered with untapped rage as the figure raised its chin. Shamat knew his face.
I curse you, Shamat. I curse you for the methods by which you civilized me to your ends.
Halt!
Shamat stepped back from the naked, dripping titan before him.
You have no orders for me anymore. The leash you wound around my neck has snapped.
Enkidu took a stride closer to him.
I was working in yours and Malish's favor. Enlil entreated me to make the odds equal between his twins.
You didn't punish the people you sent before me as a price of failure. You, who took delight in abusing them on the flimsiest of excuses.
Why do you think that the Nephilim sent after you were so ineffective? Enlil!
Enkidu's arm shot out, powerful fingers wrapping around the Igigi's throat. Long fingers squeezed, cutting off his words.
Enlil was bored, not benevolent. And you don't care about me either. I was a tool, a toy.
Mercy!
The door to the laboratory opened, and Enkidu recognized Brigid Baptiste as she entered. Copperhead SMG held pointed at the floor. He greeted her with a nod.
Brigid.
Enkidu?
Brigid scanned the room, taking note of the cloning facilities on hand.
Happy birthday.
I'll be with you in a moment. I have to make good on a promise I made to myself.
Please! Your compassion must extend to an unarmed, helpless foe!
Normally, it would.
With a violent twist, he crushed the Agigi's vertebrae against one another, fingers collapsing Shamat's windpipe with the same exertion of muscle. Yellow, terrified eyes bulged as his scaled lips worked noiselessly, mouthing words.
The trouble is, I've seen enough of your handiwork that you sold off any right to mercy other than a broken neck.
Enkidu released the Agigi slave master, his form collapsing to the floor. The only things still moving were his lips and eyes, his spinal cord severed by crushed, jagged pieces of neck bone. Shamat blinked two more times before death claimed him.
A fitting end for his kind.
Best birthday present ever.
With that, the two people exited the cloning laboratory, hurrying to rejoin their comrades. Kane and Grant crouched behind the cover of a corner, their Copperhead submachine guns pumping out precision bursts into the Nephilim soldiers trying to advance from Humbaba's Great Hall. For each of them, it was as if they had been completed. For Kane, it was figurative. While on his own, the Wolf-lean former magistrate was a formidable warrior, but he still preferred to have his friend at his side, watching out for him. It was a simple case of two fighters having formed into a well-oiled machine, able to read each other and the battlefield so completely that it was as if they were telepathic, a single combatant that was more than the sum of their firepower and fighting skills. Kane had been away from his friend for more than half of a week, but it had felt like months. For Grant, it was both figurative and literal. He had been an ethereal spirit, existing on a plane of reality that he couldn't remember except for snatches of sensations and the impression of time immemorial passing as he floated in the null space. Enkidu and the ghost that had haunted Operation Kronos were merely shadows, windows that he peered through in order to keep his sanity anchored as he floated in the null space that a human body was not meant to inhabit, and a human mind barely had the faculties to experience. As it was, Kane back at his side made him feel as if he had both of his arms again.
Who did you send Baptiste after?
Kane drilled a Nephilim through the head. Grant unhooked a grenade from the harness that Domi had brought for him.
Enkidu!
So putting him together would have killed someone real.
Grant whipped the grin with all of his strength, bouncing it off a far wall up the ramp. As it rebounded, it landed in a group of Nephilim who had taken cover around a corner, trying to get an angle on the two humans. Severed limbs rained down the ramp.
It would have if someone weren't already creating a bunch of bodies without brains in their heads.
The scaly bastards we're hosing down?
Kane trotted across the base of the ramp, taking advantage of the distraction of their enemy.
Yeah, seems like my little time worm is a weird thing.
Grant fed a fresh magazine into his SMG.
That's the one thing I remember from being lost. I could see myself as a worm.
I kind of remembered that too. Sort of like a blur or smear of your image.
Kane's marksmanship dropped another of the alien drones.
Mine did this crazy loop back on itself before it split in two. Cover me.
Kane sent suppressing fire up the ramp as Grant trotted up toward the landing where the enemy were huddled. As Grant closed in, a Nephilim warrior snaked an arm around the corner, an Asp energy blaster on his wrist, ready to blindly fire. Grabbing the Nephilim's arm in a vice-like grip, Grant pivoted, using his considerable mass and superior leverage to haul the would-be sniper out into the open and whipped it face-first into the corridor's wall. When two more Nephilim reacted to the sudden disappearance of their friend by stepping into the open to deal with Grant, Kane's copperhead snarled out a salvo of bullets that cut off the creature's attempt to avenge their comrade. Grant rolled another grin around the corner as Kane covered him. The big man pressed his back to the wall as the miniature bomb detonated 20 feet up the ramp. Wounded drones staggered into the open, where the two former magistrates made short work of them with their submachine guns. Their comtacts hissed to life with Domi's whisper.
In position.
As the two men occupied the horde of Humbaba's reptilian soldiers, Malesh, Domi, and Shizuka had scaled the spine of the wrecked scout ship, using it to get behind the Nephilim cadre. Kane jogged up to join Grant.
Do it.
The sound of a single automatic weapon was accompanied by the hissing shriek of plasma bolts discharging from an Asp. That would be Domi and Malesh in their flank maneuver. Grant knew that Shizuka's contribution to the assault wasn't going to be audible, but within moments he and Kane witnessed her mastery as a pair of dead Nephilim crashed into view on the landing, pinned together by a single goose-feathered arrow shaft. Finally, the shriek of energy weapons and auto-fire died out.
All clear? We're stepping out.
Clear.
The flanking attack had only lasted a minute, and, combined with the slaughter inflicted by the magistrate's grenades and marksmanship, created a carpet of corpses sprawled on the incline, blood flowing like a river around the men's boots.
Malesh, does this look like everything Humbaba has?
Malesh's cat-like eyes swept the scene, taking an inventory of the bloody aftermath.
We've halved their numbers. My brother is too keen to have thrown all of his forces into action against us.
What about the guards who would have been in the part of the palace that we crashed the scout ship through?
I took them into account. We can expect 30 more Nephilim on hand, plus some of his Igigi officers.
Igigi?
A different breed of scaly servant. These can think, but they're not quite as good a set of soldiers as...
Red paused, towing the corpse of one of the drones.
Igigi can be scared as well as they scare others.
You speak from experience.
Shizuka traded her kumi for her katana. Any hope of recovering her arrows was out of the question, and the few shafts remaining in her quiver were not going to be useful once they staged their assault on the main hall.
One of them, Shamat, did some bad shit to me. Enkidu. He's received his reward, Grant.
The assembled Cerberus warriors and Malesh turned to see Bridget Baptiste and a man who was naked save for an improvised kilt wrapped around his waist and the coiled metal of an asp around his wrist. Enkidu was easily as tall as Grant, though his body was more finely honed and developed. Faint whip scars, formed by the doppelganger's memories of his brief life in Uruduk, adorned his broad shoulders and back. Enkidu and Grant were easily recognizable as variations of each other, even though Enkidu's skin was more of a dark olive than the deep brown of Grant's African-American heritage. The man-bull's long locks were also of Mediterranean origin, contrasting with Grant's bald pate.
Was this your doing or mine? Not that I'm complaining. I couldn't tell to save my life, but at least it saved yours.
Malesh nodded, stepping closer to Enkidu, pausing only to look at Grant's face.
So much like mine, but not.
I belong to someone else.
Shizuka was soundlessly at his side, her slender arm around his waist.
So how come there are two of you now?
Brigid cupped her chin for a moment, then began to speak.
In the simplest of terms, Enkidu was destined to exist.
Well, it must be a day for miracles. Baptiste explained something in only 5 words.
Brigid wrinkled her nose.
Humbaba is still active, and the tales that filtered down through to our time say that Gilgamesh and Enkidu slew him, incurring the wrath of the gods.
And that means there's still the chance Enkidu gets killed.
Not killed. Taken away.
This isn't written yet, and there was no mention of our presence here.
Besides, story says she's a he. Can't go believing everything you read, Brigid.
No, you cannot, Apekin.
The thought ripped through all of their minds. As one, the group looked up the ramp to see Humbaba standing, his fists on his hips. His muzzle was adorned with blood and intestines, and his eyes were alight with malice.
Humbaba!
You came to see me. I would be a poor host if I didn't entertain my guests.
In a heartbeat, the Cerberus explorers exploded into action. Kane's and Grant's Sin Eaters snapped from their holsters with lightning speed, followed by Domi drawing her pistol and Shizuka breaking into a charge. Enkidu was hot on her heels, his kopesh singing the same song of a blade being drawn as he followed her. Bridget Baptiste was the slowest to react, but even her reflexes had been only a tenth of a second slower than her comrades as she whipped her copperhead to aim at Humbaba. The assembled humans dropped to their knees in pain as one, weapons tumbling from numbed hands. Even Malesh had stepped back, equally stunned, but still standing.
I am the son of Enlil, and the rumors spread by you little apes have no bearing on the true history of this pitiful rock.
Grant and Enkidu looked up as one, recovering from the telepathic shout first. Both men struggled to their feet, Grant's Sin Eater having retracted when the half-Anunnaki governor hit them with the psychic and sonic waves. Enkidu picked up his hook sword from where it had fallen. Both sets of eyes locked on Humbaba.
We're not working at the same speed we did when we first met this bastard. No, but we're still relatively fresh, and we're ready for him this time.
Grant's Sin Eater clacked into place once more. That was all the answer Enkidu needed to inform him that the two men weren't going to back down.
Come, let us play.
Your war is with me!
Malish's powerful legs launched her across the 20-foot gap between them. Her talons flashed through the air, and Humbaba was ready for her. The pair tumbled backward in a flurry of lashing claws. Grant and Enkidu charged to her aid, just as a pair of pike-wielding Nephilim rushed into view. Asp and Sin Eater erupted in the same instant. and Kidu and Grant quickly drilling their opponents. The Nephilim went down, dropping their long pikes, and Kidu stooped for one of the fallen warriors.
The big sticks shoot. A nice upgrade from the Asp.
Grant grabbed up the other pike.
Let's see what they do to the big pussy.
But as the two men swung the sharp-ended lances around, more of the Nephilim appeared, wielding the long plasma pikes. Three of the enemy lurched into Grant's path, and four spear-shaped blasters tangled against each other. He dug his feet in as the Nephilim pushed against him, and with a corkscrewing twist, he managed to entwine his polearm with theirs. One of the warrior drones caught the shaft of his own pike in the face, the powerful blow splitting his scaly skin and exposing a cheekbone. A second twist pushed the points of the other two weapons toward the floor. Grant jerked his pike back half around for one more swing, and two Nephilim caught the full force of his handle. On the other side, Enkidu was faced with a pair of the scaly clones. He stabbed one in the chest with the point of his plasma pike. On contact, the point flared with enough heat to pierce the finely woven armor, and then the charged spear was clear through his opponent. The Nephilim tottered backward, wresting the pike from his hands. The other figure thrust his lance at Enkidu, but Enkidu stepped in tight, his left shoulder striking the shaft of the pike and deflecting it. The drone's belly was exposed. Enkidu aimed his fist and cut loose with the asp wrapped around his forearm. A hot ball of energy curled the hairs on Enkidu's chest and forearm, but the heat on the receiving end of the bolt did far more damage to its target than its shooter. The Nephilim, whose face Grant had opened with the handle of his weapon, staggered toward Enkidu, who met him with a second asp bolt. Seven bodies lay at the feet of the twin warriors, and two dozen more formed a living wall between Grant, Enkidu, and their destination, Malish's side.
Fuck me.
There'll be time for that later.
Shizuka was a blur that shot past them. The thousand-folded steel of her katana lashed at the armored bodies of the Nephilim. Kane and Domi appeared on either side of Grant and Enkidu, bracketing the two men. Their guns barking together, bullets hammering at the metal-clad drones, through the flexible weave of their armor, shattering ribs, bowling over soldiers that hadn't felt the slicing edge of Shizuka's sword. Bridget was a heartbeat behind Kane and Domi, her rifle batting mop-up for wounded Nephilim who had staggered away from the slaughter ground where their comrades had fallen. She targeted the ones shaking off their stunned status, bringing up their asp energy blasters to avenge their injuries and their comrades. Short bursts ripped into the wounded but still viable opponents as they took aim. Bridget hit those still standing, nailing them down for the rest of eternity. Kane stepped through pooling blood.
That was a mess. Humbaba and Malish, where did they go?
The bellows of combat that would have directed Kane's keen senses toward the conflict between the Scions of Enlil were now blurred by echoes off the high, vaulted ceiling of Humbaba's Great Hall. The Leonine Godling had plunged the large chamber into darkness, only a few cracks in the ceiling filtering down weak streams of sunlight.
The corner.
Remembering the section of the buried temple that they had entered, Kane made a beeline toward the fight. The others followed in hot pursuit. The six people reloaded on the run, Shizuka having sheathed her sword and exchanged it for one of the Nephilim's power pikes, joining Grant and Enkidu in their appropriation of Anunnaki technology to deal with the massive Humbaba. Grant looked at Shizuka as she held the energy-spitting spear in one hand. As good as the woman was with the sword and the bow, she was a samurai first of all. And the first weapon a young girl trained with was the double-headed blend of axe and spear known as the Naginata. The concept behind both the Nephilim pike and the Naginata were essentially the same, especially considering how the superheated point had sliced through the torso of a drone as if it were butter. Not that they could do anything with their ranged weapons. Malish and Humbaba were in close combat, rolling atop each other, trading swipes of their razor-sharp claws. As they got closer, the humans were stopped by the oppressive mental pressure of the psychic runoff from their telepathic battle. Fighting body and mind, the two half-gods were in the center of a maelstrom of chaos and rage, a field that humans entered only if they wanted to have synapses fired by the crossfire of two superhuman wills. Backing up, Enkidu glowered at the snarling Humbaba as he backhanded his sister, pinning her beneath him. Grant echoed the spite burning in Enkidu's eyes, clutching his power pike with a white-knuckled grip. The two men opened fire with the energy lances, but Humbaba was gone, leaping off Malesh with blinding speed and agility. He'd moved even before they'd triggered their weapons, betraying an ace in the hole that had not been revealed before.
That's how he was able to hit us when we thought we could see him coming. He adjusted for our precognition with his own.
Humbaba landed in a crouch, his face bloody with claw wounds caused by his sister's talons. For all the slashes on his big body, he was still spry and quick. Malesh, on the other hand, needed to lean against the wall to stand up. She was covered in cuts and one eye was swollen, clenched nearly shut. Blood dribbled from the corner of her mouth and her knees wobbled.
If I could dominate my sister so completely, what hope do two mere humans have? Without your enhanced speed, you're simply victims suffering from delusions of adequacy.
I think his mouth just wrote a check his ass can't cash. We've dealt with worse than an overgrown tabby like you, Humbaba. We've faced your father and his brothers.
I forgot about you other mewling monkeys. Come, do your worst.
Bullets and plasma bolts erupted, spraying the spot where Humbaba had taunted them. But the only thing the Cerberus group had to show for their united volley of firepower was a scorched patch of wall. Humbaba was a blur rocketing over their heads, launched by leg muscles that carried his 1,000-pound frame with ease and grace. Like a crashing meteor, he landed in the middle of their group. Fortunately, Kane and his companions had good reflexes of their own, scattering before Humbaba's great bulk smashed one of their number to paste.
This is going to be fun.
Shizuka whipped around, 3 feet of forged steel honed to a fine edge, lashing out at the leonine godling's back. Humbaba reacted to the deadly chop at the last moment, turning what would have been a spine-severing stroke into a deep, long gash on his shoulder. He spun away from the Tiger of Heaven's arch as she lunged outward with her power pike, its burning tip raising a dark scar on his abdominals. Humbaba wove, trying to escape the whirlwind attacking him, bounding over the small Japanese woman at a height where he avoided her singing katana as it whistled through the air. The 9-foot, 1,000-pound hybrid of Anunnaki and Lion Man genetics landed and immediately came under fire. Domi cut loose with her Detonics Combat Master, its 45-caliber slugs impacting on tough hide and unyielding muscle underneath. No! Humbaba took 6 slugs to his abdomen, all of them feeling like sharp punches, but the powerful handgun hadn't penetrated his skin despite the pain. Domi whipped her combat knife around in an arc, and Humbaba sidestepped barely enough to keep her footlong blade from spearing into a vital organ in his exposed belly. Humbaba whirled, Grant's cloak flashing in the albino woman's face, the heavy bands of polymer and Kevlar slapping her hard enough to knock her back. He swung his fist out, his mighty paw only glancing off her shadow suit, one claw opening the skin and the polymer-blended uniform from just above her left breast to her shoulder. Domi scrambled backward, grimacing at the flesh wound as it bled profusely. Bridget Baptiste stepped up, her copperhead blazing and pelting Humbaba with 4.85mm rounds. The small, lightning-fast bullets fared only slightly better than Domi's booming .45 auto. The high-velocity projectiles appeared as glimmering studs in his skin, only barely penetrating Humbaba's fur and thick dermis.
Neat little toys. I might just allow my soldiers to invent them so they can conquer the world.
Humbaba started to lash out at the flame-haired archivist, then paused and leaped up, rocketing away over their heads.
Kane, Bridget, he reads our minds to dodge us. He can't read Shizuka or Domi.
The reason that the samurai woman and the feral girl had been able to touch Humbaba was because they operated on instinct, not conscious thought. Shizuka, in battle, existed in a state of Zen consciousness that didn't think or focus on any single part of the world about her, but took in everything in her presence. In this manner, the Tiger of Heaven was not distracted from the subtle cues of threats around her, but it had also left her mind clear and uncluttered, able to move without hesitation. Domi, on the other hand, didn't fold into a disciplined mental state, but entered a bestial rage, one that she could focus and restrain with the accuracy of a surgeon's scalpel. Such instinctual and primal mentality also cleared her conscious mind of strategy and tactics, clearing any hesitation and making her reaction and action instant. Brigid Baptiste's intellect was such that she was able to subsume this knowledge, hiding it from Humbaba as she rushed to Domi's rescue, covering those thoughts with other mental gibberish. The three women had been able to hide their tactics so that they could get the drop on Humbaba, but Brigid wondered about the men, who had neither a wild, bestial side nor mental or martial discipline to mask their intentions. That's when Grant lowered his power pike, his intent to stab the godling between his shoulder blades, letting Humbaba read his intent loud and clear and flush him into the middle of another attack. Operating on pure reflex, Kane and Enkidu reacted to Humbaba as the powerful form launched himself into the air, a leap that couldn't be steered, even if the half-Anunnaki foe could read their instincts. Sin-Eater and Powerpike erupted in unison, and Humbaba was hit by armor-piercing 9mm slugs and a charged plasma beam that sliced through him. The giant Catman didn't land on all fours. He crashed head and shoulders first into the ground, leaving him open for Grant and Brigid to lunge at him together. Grant's energy lance cut a nasty furrow along Humbaba's chest, while Brigid's TP-9 cracked out a peppering volley of gunshots that tore out clumps of his mane and carved small 9mm divots in his muzzle. Enraged, Humbaba snapped his long legs straight, kicking both Grant and Brigid in the chest and hurling them nearly 40 feet across the Great Hall's floor. Only the protective qualities of her shadow suit and Grant's physical conditioning and Kevlar trench coat kept the two people from serious injury as they landed and rolled on the thick stone floor. Neither was standing up quickly. Kane opened up with his Sin-Eater on full automatic, emptying his 20-round magazine into the sprawled Humbaba, while the godling had no leverage or footing to roll out of the way. Humbaba twisted, facing his back to the full auto salvo. Grant's trench coat, combined with the thick, heavy muscle and bone protecting the back, were more than enough to blunt the wounding power of Kane's machine pistol. Enkidu leaped at the bestial master who had oppressed him for so long. The power pike burned hotly as he put all his weight behind the stab. Humbaba snatched the shaft of the weapon behind its glowing point, and while he couldn't stop the forward momentum of the deadly energy spear, he redirected it into the stone floor, melting it into the ground over his shoulder. Humbaba jerked his head aside, his mane igniting from the plasma aura of the flaming spear point. Hair flared into the bright flower of agony that flashed across his face. Blinded, Humbaba reflexively swatted Enkidu aside like a rag doll, crashing him to the floor. Enkidu rolled, clutching his ribs to catch his breath. The fires in Humbaba's mane had died down, but his eyes had been dried out and were shut, stung by the acrid smoke and ash that burned them. He was half blind now, brain reeling from the distractions of multiple injuries. Shizuka discarded the power pike and drew her kumi, knocking an arrow in one smooth, swift movement. The leonine giant sat up groggily, covered in burns and cuts.
You damn little monkeys! I'll kill you all! No human has ever dared to make an Anunnaki bleed!
I dare.
The shaft sank its full length into the godling's chest, and he clutched at the feathered nub. While small arms bullets didn't have the mass or kinetic energy to pierce the alien hybrid's thick skin, muscle, and bone, the razor-tipped arrows had all that in abundance. Shizuka drew another arrow, slipping it onto the string, and was taking aim for a second lightning-fast shot when Humbaba lunged. Her honed reflexes saved her from the bulk of the half-breed's charge, but 1,000 pounds of rampaging force was a significant impact even as a glancing blow. Kumi and Arrow tumbled from her hands and she spun, crashing into Domi, who had hurled herself to break the samurai's fall. Humbaba skidded to a halt, glaring at the two small women who had been the first to draw his blood. As he half-turned, claws extended to rip the female humans to shreds for their sins against an Anunnaki overlord's chosen prince, a golden form rocketed into his back, power pike spearing him against a 3-foot-thick support pillar. Malesh raked her talons on either side of her brother's neck as he bucked against her, knocking her back.
Finally decided to join the party, little sister.
Blood soaked Humbaba's fur and scales, and bloody froth bubbled at his nostrils as he glared at his kin.
I thought a weakling such as you would let the humans finish your work.
Malesh rose from the floor, sneering back at her brother.
Like you tried to do with me. The trouble is, enslaved men have nothing on free people fighting for what they believe in. The destruction of our father's tyranny is their goal in their time. You are simply a symptom of the disease Enlil has spread across this world.
I'm not dead yet.
Neither are we.
Grant had Shizuka's dropped bow with a razor-tipped shaft knocked. The arrow pierced the hybrid's shoulder. Once more injured, Humbaba's leonine head rolled back to release a roar of pain. Just as Enkidu threw a grenade at his widening maw. The miniature bomb struck Humbaba hard enough in the mouth to break off one of his canines as it barreled to the back of the godling's throat. Humbaba reached for his neck, gagging at the sudden intrusion. Off balance from the attacks made by both aspects of Grant, he was easy prey for Malesh to seize him by the arm. The 7-foot-tall warrior goddess whirled, whipping her brother with all of her might into the corner of the great hall, where the floor had been pushed up to almost touch the ceiling. Stone collapsed around Humbaba for a moment, pinning him and keeping him from spitting out the grenade. A heartbeat later, Humbaba's legs twitched as they lost contact with the brain that now was scattered among the rocks, his once massive skull in wet shards. Dust rained from the ceiling, burying half of the son of Enlil's corpse, his long limbs dangling along with the tails of what used to be Grant's trench coat. Grant panted, holding up his counterpart, Enkidu, while Malesh helped Shizuka and Domi to their feet.
Well, that's where we found him.
Exactly the proper position. History is right where it's supposed to be.
They looked at the two couples, Grant and Shizuka, and Enkidu and Malesh, embracing each other, eyes closed as they reveled in the contact with lovers and family.
We traveled through time, killed off a god, and Grant is back together with his woman. My work here is done.
But not theirs.
Bridget inclined her head at Enkidu and Malesh.
Tough times for them?
The gods are going to separate them, and Malesh will quest to reunite with him.
She'll find him, just like Shizuka found Grant.
It'll be without our help. We have our own battles to fight.
Perhaps. The story of Gilgamesh ends as she enters a deep sleep beside an unnamed river.
Sort of an anticlimactic ending.
Or the beginning of a centuries-long journey in suspended animation. Gilgamesh's tale ended on Earth. Perhaps it concludes back on Nibiru. A happier denouement than the one written for mankind.
It'd be the only way either of them would let it end. Explains why Enlil still has a head in our time, too.
Should we tell them what might happen?
Bridget shook her head.
Malesh has closed off her mind and hasn't touched mine to get any information. She's going to face her destiny one day at a time.
Grant, it's time for us to go home.
Grant looked over his shoulder, then nodded.
A minute more.
He turned to Enkidu.
Good luck in your future. I'll take my knocks when they come. You do the same for yourself. And Shizuka, too.
The samurai woman reached up and cupped Enkidu's bearded cheek, smiling at him.
Do not forget that your goddess needs you, and you need her.
Grant embraced Malish.
Thanks for keeping Enkidu alive. Remember that I owe you a few favors.
Friends do not owe each other favors. Perhaps someday, in the streams of time and space, our paths will cross again.
Grant winced as he felt every inch of battery and bruising he'd taken.
If so, I'll have to stock up on painkillers.
Grant noticed the uncanny similarity in the laughter of Malish and Shizuka, and marveled that the same soul could be separated across the ages, like Enkidu and himself. Grant took Shizuka's tiny hand in his, and the lovers walked to join Cain, Bridget Baptiste, and Domi. Baptiste had set the interphaser's recall code so that the time trawl could be directed to them. Enkidu watched as their figures faded.
See you around, old friend.
His soul is as old as yours, my love. Who is to say that you will not find him here?
Enkidu managed a smile.
Cain, Bridget, El, maybe even Domi and Lakesh are all bouncing around. We sure could use the help.
Enkidu took his lover's hand as Grant had taken Shizuka's.
But as long as we have each other, I don't fear any destiny.
The goddess and her consort walked through the darkened hall, together and unafraid. Thousands of light years from Earth, a relatively small interstellar ship hurtled through deep space. It had been on its journey for as long as Ulikumus's prison. They had even passed within thousands of miles of each other, but the memory of a brief psychic contact between scions of Enlil was far stronger for Guy Malish than for her half-brother. Ulikumus had been consumed by a hatred for Enlil, the mental anchor that helped the stone-skinned god maintain his sanity. Malish shared that anger at her Anunnaki father, but it was nowhere near as intense as Ulikumus's. What carried the sleeping goddess, resting in a coffin-like suspended animation chamber through her centuries of travel, was not rage, but love. Among the stars, at the end of the interstellar journey, Enkidu waited, sharing the same millennia-long slumber that she did. Her vengeful father had taken action in the one way he could best torture her, keeping Enkidu in an eternal sleep that was neither death nor life. Enkidu, however, had lived up to his promise never to leave Malish alone. Resting in the chamber next to Malish's was their daughter, Domigi, conceived the night before their swim into the palace of Uruduk. She was named for the woman that Grant had loved as if she were his own child, and she had grown tall, strong, and brave. Together, they would write the end of a tale that Bridget Baptiste had only guessed at. And perhaps they would reunite with the heroes of Cerberus someday. For now, Malish and her daughter crossed the gulf between stars, rushing to Enkidu's rescue. When Grant's eyes fluttered open, the first thing he saw was the tanned, soft shoulder of Shizuka. The beautiful woman breathed deeply in the bliss of peaceful sleep. Shizuka was entwined with him, her supple form spooned against his. The jet-black silk of her hair poured over his arm and her back pressed against his barrel-like chest, while his left forearm rested in the saddle formed by the curve of her waist between her ribcage and one sleek, muscular hip. Grant let the heaviness of his eyelids drag themselves closed. He didn't want to disentangle himself from her yet. He allowed himself a small smile, enjoying the scent of her hair, the warmth of her skin. His dreams had been troubled with glimpses of the space between times, leftovers from his imprisonment in the time stream. But he thought of his family back at Cerberus. He'd spent a few days recovering from his adventure at the beginning of human history and drinking in the joy of Shizuka's companionship. He hated the thought of leaving her side, but he also missed the people who were the brother, the sister, the daughter he'd never had. Grant kissed Shizuka's shoulder. He would find his way back to New Edo easily. But for now, he rested his cheek against the back of Shizuka's head. Cerberus, the Anunnaki, the Millennial Consortium, and all the rest of the inhabitants of the crazed world called Earth, they could all wait as Grant took his fill of the comfort of Shizuka's embrace. Outlanders 56, Cradle of Destiny by James Axler is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright and production copyright 2024, Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Terrence Aselford. With performances by Terrence Aselford as Kane, Zeke Alton as Grant and Enkidu, Nanette Savard as Bridget Baptiste, Crystal Lee as Shizuka and Guy Malesh, Bradley Foster Smith as Daryl Morgenstern, Kevil Shah as Lakesh Singh, and Cameron McNary as Humbaba. Also with Ryan Haugen, Nora Ashrati, Gabriel Michael, Mort Shelby, Richard Rowan, Eric Messner, Ken Jackson, David Zitney, Drew Kopas, Chris Stinson, Donald Guzzi, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Scott McCormick, and Yasmin Twazam. Adapted for Graphic Audio and directed by Robert McDonald. Dialogue editing and Graphic Audio sound design by Robert McDonald. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. If you've enjoyed Outlanders 56, Cradle of Destiny, check out our whole catalog of Outlanders releases available now at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for a sample clip of Outlands Warp, the latest title in the series by James Axler, Deathlands.
Step back from the door and keep your hands visible.
The voice's tone of boredom was good. It meant he wouldn't be on his guard. Ryan and JB rose from their cots and took the three short strides across the cell to the far wall. Ryan stood with a thin blanket draped over his body, his hand on one knotted end to hold it in place, while JB was dressed only in his pants, no shirt, no boots. The door slid open, and outside in the corridor, Christy lay strapped to a gurney, accompanied by two armored guards. She was twitching occasionally as though having a nightmare. When Ryan saw her, his anger boiled up, feeling like he swallowed something hard and jagged.
Stay back.
The guards rolled the gurney into the room, and both men leaned over it to unstrap Christy's wrists and ankles. As they did, Ryan gave a nod, and he and JB moved into action. Ryan's hand, the one holding the knotted end of the blanket, thrust outwards, sending the blanket snapping out toward the guard nearest to him. Ryan had knotted a handful of bolts into the blanket, hardware he'd detached from the beds. The weight had not hit the guard high on his side. Surprise as much as pain making him step back, turning awkwardly in place. At the same moment, JB reached for the makeshift weapon he had stashed under the pillow of his bed. It was the grill from the air vent, meticulously unscrewed with the arm of his glasses. It was made of thin metal, its corners surprisingly sharp. JB stepped forward and thrust one of those sharp corners into the gut of the other guard, driving the man back. JB ducked low, knowing that Ryan would come in high, with a powerful punch at the guard who had the courtesy or misfortune to stagger right into the blow. JB, meanwhile, sprang toward the guard who'd been struck by the snap of the bolt-heavy blanket, and he cut across his face with the sharp corner of the grate, drawing a wide line of blood across the man's chin.
Now!
JB and Ryan switched places once more, like some old-time wrestling tag team. As the first guard reached for his cut face, Ryan grabbed the nightstick that the man had holstered at his belt. Before the guard could react, Cutter swung at his head, striking his exposed skull.
You should have worn your helmet, dirtbag.
Ryan swung again as the man dropped back onto the nearest cot. Guard 2 was stepping back as JB swung the sharp-cornered grate before him. Left, right, left. The guard stepped back, despite there being almost no room to do so, weaving out of the way of the makeshift knife point. Then the guard had his gun unholstered and aimed. Not on JB, but on Christy.
And now, enjoy a sample clip from Hostile Takeover, the latest title in the new series by James Axler, The Traitor.
The mutated monster was 50 yards away, too far for Marsh to throw the jerry can at it. It held its position and stared at him. The forked tongue slid out, and the multiple legs flexed. Marsh stood and held the jerry can at the end of both arms. He gripped the handles as tightly as he could and had to force his words out.
Harley, I'm gonna need you to shoot this container. But not now!
Make up your mind!
I'll tell you when to shoot!
You're not the boss of me.
Marsh ignored her, hoped she wouldn't shoot him, and swung the jerry can slightly forward and back to test the weight of the container contents and his strength. The lizard spider was so far away, he knew he couldn't make the throw to reach the creature. He considered getting closer, but that wasn't appealing. The thing moved too quickly. The jerry can was only 30 pounds. He could ease up a little to make the throw shorter. He could do that. He tried to make his feet move, but they were locked to the ground. He stared at the mutated creature, afraid to take his gaze from it.
You still with me, Harley?
Somehow, the idea of dying alone seemed worse than just dying. When Traitor had found him, that had almost happened. Everyone else had been dead. Marsh never wanted to go through that again. He didn't want to die alone.
Wouldn't miss seeing you get eight for the world.
Make sure you shoot the...
The lizard spider sprang from the Humvee toward Marsh and cleared 20 yards. The thing landed in a mad scramble of churning limbs and streaked for Marsh. Beyond fear now, with survival on the line and propelled by adrenaline and the primitive drive to survive, Marsh stepped forward just as he'd envisioned the move and swung the jerry can in a wide arc. And it swung in a slow vertical spin through the air. But he made himself focus on the creature. The container wasn't going to hit the lizard spider. He'd missed by a couple of yards. But it had been the only play he'd had. Off balance, he fell toward the ground and awkwardly reached for the specter.
Now, Harley!
Marsh knew he couldn't get up in time, and hoped that the thing killed him quickly.
Now! Shoot the jerry can!
Harley was a good shot. Marsh had seen that. The young woman wasn't as good as Jez with a long gun, but she could be pure death up close and of a sudden. The jerry can hit the ground only 15 yards away into the side of the lizard spider. Tracer fire from Harley's M4 blazed through the night, and the thunder from the weapon roared in Marsh's ears because Harley was there beside him. She stood over him, and hot brass spilled over Marsh. The bullets ripped through the metal jerry can. One of the tracer rounds set the gasoline on fire, and the container exploded.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romantasy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind. On the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.